This is episode 77 of IDRA Class Notes.
Most of my math teachers really just challenged us. They never gave us all the pieces to the puzzle. And we had to do a lot of figuring out for ourselves what it was we were supposed to be doing. We really latched onto the challenge of the entire thing. And I tried to give that to my students. I don't have to give you all the pieces, but the problem-solving aspect of it, you find the rest, kind of like a quest. That's how they get their own, that self-motivation. It's hard to give to a student. You get their curiosity, and you can get them to do almost anything.
Welcome to IDRA's Class Notes podcast series. I'm Lori Posner. With school just starting up again, we'll be talking today about how to create dynamic mathematics classrooms at the secondary level. And I'm here today for this conversation with Paula Johnson. Paula earned her master's in education at the University of Texas at San Antonio, with a concentration in technology, and has extensive experience in mathematics education as a teacher, academic coach and instructor, mathematics department coordinator, and consultant. She joined IDRA's staff this summer, and I'm so pleased that she could be with us today. Welcome, Paula.
Thank you, Lori.
Let's begin with talking a little bit about your background. Where did your passion for mathematics start?
Well, actually, in college, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. I was just majoring in math with a computer science background. And the last semester of my graduate work, I was tutoring a friend of mine in calculus, and we were going at it all night. She did not get it. Composition of functions, I'll never forget. And we were ready to quit. And finally, I just kind of gave up and said, okay, you know what? Let's take it to what you know. And so I told her a story about me going to visit someone in another state by an airplane and then going in a car to another location and how that's a composition of functions. You just take something and move it on. And she got it. And the look on her face the next day, I saw my advisor. I said, that's what I've got to do. I've got to teach math. And it's just been wonderful ever since.
That's great. And were there teachers who particularly inspired that interest in mathematics in you? What did they do to make a difference?
Most of my math teachers really just challenged us. They never gave us all the pieces to the puzzle. And we had to do a lot of figuring out for ourselves what it was we were supposed to be doing. And we really latched onto the challenge of the entire thing. And that's kind of how I tried to give that to my students, that I don't have to give you all the pieces, but the problem-solving aspect of it, you find the rest. And so it made it kind of like a quest. That's how they seem to get their own, that self-motivation. It's hard to give to a student. Intrinsic motivation is not just running rampant, so it's hard to accomplish that feat. But that's kind of how we did it, is get their curiosity, and you can get them to do almost anything.
And do you remember any specific moments in your background where teachers engaged that kind of curiosity and challenged you in a way that you found particularly exciting? And
I for some reason, I was always really adept in math. And so sometimes I would be ahead of my class. There'd be a lot of us that might be ahead of the game. And so she would give us questions that there really was no way we should know about it. And that was, again, the challenge. Even if we didn't find the particular answer, it was the fact that we knew kind of what to look for, and it just made us ask more questions. And more times than not, it ended up being a preview of what we were about to go into. And so it caught our attention because we're like, okay, now we want to know. And that's kind of the way, you know, it's like a jigsaw, and you leave out a few pieces, and the kids kind of are hungry to know how to finish it.
Hmm. Something you'd mentioned to me recently about how you advise students when they're thinking about whether to take a math class that's really challenging to them, that might be beyond where they are in terms of their own level at that mm-hmm. time. And could you say more about that? I found that really interesting.
Well, a lot of times students are hesitant to take a class in math, especially because it sounds really difficult. You know, all I've heard about pre-calculus and calculus and statistics, even college algebra, is how difficult the courses are. And my encouragement to them was always, you know, you have your foundation, you have a good solid foundation, at least attempt the class. Take it, and you don't have to get an A. You know, you might lose a few points on your GPA, but the knowledge that you'll have, the understanding that you'll have prior to going to college, this was usually my juniors and seniors, I always encouraged them to take the course anyway, even if they did not do well, because when they actually got to college or any area of study, you know, most people are going to have to take math, and that they wouldn't be fearful of it. It reduced that fear factor, that they could say, you know, I might not know all of it, but I know a lot more than I did, and now I'll learn more. You know, it's just, mm-hmm. it just kind of helped them in their future.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Now, as a director of a mathematics department, I know that you have done a lot of classroom observation and also as a consultant. And I'm just wondering, when you first walk in, what are you looking for in a dynamic mathematics classroom?
Really, you're looking at the, I look at the room environment. What evidence of learning is there just by observing the classroom? Are the students engaged? Is the teacher engaging the student? Around the room, there's evidence of student work, performance assessments, agendas of the day. Do the students know what they're doing and why they're doing it? Questioning techniques. Essential questions usually written on the board of just, it could be like in the universal design model, putting a question up that they might not yet be able to solve, but by the end of that class or the end of the unit, they would be able to do quite well. And then again, with the students and teacher, the relationship between them, you can tell if there's a positive relationship going on, if the students are like waiting on the edge of their seat to see what's going to come next. Are they responding? Are the kids talking? Are they talking among themselves? Are they talking about math? Are they really thinking about what they're doing and responding to the teacher?
And how do you make sure that diverse learners, students of all backgrounds, particularly English language learners, are engaged? What kind of strategies do you suggest to teachers who may be new to working with students who are English language learners?
One of the first things that I look for and encourage in teachers is not to isolate the students, and it's not necessary to group them together. It is nice to have a student who can speak the language of the ELL student, and if not, then strategies from the teacher's point of view of using academic word walls, trying to show pictures of things, and as they're describing in words, be describing in pictures and the equations. A lot of students where English is not the first language, in math, the symbolism is not the problem. It's when you get to a word problem situation that just really thinking before you give the questions, what stumbling blocks the students might have, things that just don't translate well, that are not similar in sound, that you're looking for those things prior to the instruction to kind of give the kids a heads up. And there's all sorts of pictures that can be used and things like that to help the student adjust with the pictures, the words, and the equations and put it all together.
And what kinds of hands-on projects do you think work really well at the secondary level? Let's say for Algebra 1.
Oh my goodness. Anything that can be tied to the real world. And I know a lot of teachers shy away from hands-on activities, but they can definitely be controlled. Anything that the student feels ownership of, a lot of times it's in debate form, like give them a project that where they have to actually create teams. And it's not truly a competition between the students, but they are forced to think, okay, this is our game plan, this is what we're supposed to be doing, especially in the form of, say, rates. Give them a real-world scenario. You're a t-shirt company, and this is your price, and you're both haggling for my business. You know, how can you give me the better deal given certain parameters, things like that. It just makes it hands-on. It makes them think, but it's not abstract. It's very concrete. They know about things like this, and I would use things like, it's your senior class, and you're trying to purchase t-shirts, you know, for the big softball game. You know, just make it real for them. Because it's something they might actually want to do one day. It just helps.
And sometimes there's a divide between teaching more conceptual, sort of the why behind mathematics versus the how or the procedural. And I'm just wondering, how do you speak with new teachers about that question of presenting conceptual versus procedural?
A lot of times we teach the way we're taught. And most math teachers had a very strong math background. And so their almost subconscious expectations of students will be the same way. A lot of times I prefer to give the student the whole picture to begin with, just to let them know this is the end-all be-all. Like, this is the hardest question I could probably give you on this particular topic. And then, you know, now I'm going to show you how to get there. And what within instruction, showing them that there are multiple routes to a particular problem. most of the time, you know, like even order of operations, students want to know, is this the only way to do this? Every now and then, yes, that's the case. But more than not, there are different paths to the same solution. And I personally like to show them all the ways, even when they say, no, miss, I got it. I'm like, well, you got it. But someone else might have some issues still, and you don't have to call anybody out, but just showing them that there are usually multiple ways to the answer, and then they have the right to select the best method for them is really helpful. But they need to know the why, but it's kind of in context. You don't have to make it truly abstract, and you don't want to just show them steps, because they need to be able to transfer the knowledge to any problem that they're given.
For teachers who may not have as strong of a mathematics background, but find themselves in the situation where they're trying to do the best they can, but they don't quite feel that they have a complete grasp on presenting the conceptual side of mm-hmm. mathematics, how do you help these teachers to sharpen their own content knowledge?
Most times I encourage my content teams to observe each other's classrooms on a particular content, especially a new teacher, if they've never taught it before. And this has happened several times, that the new teacher may back themselves up a day. They might be one day behind, and then they're observing their cohort, their teachers in a similar content area, so they can kind of take what they see from a master teacher or at least a veteran teacher and make it their own and then deliver it. And in a lot of cases, it really helps the teacher see, you know, it's kind of a refresher. You know, it may have been a little while since they even took the courses or understood the concepts, especially in a new content area, because math is kind of a course-by-course situation. You do different things, and so it just helps the teacher, the new teacher, kind of see different ways of how to and then make it their own.
You know, I know you're very interested in combining mathematics teaching and technology, so I want to make sure that we have the opportunity to talk a little bit about what new technologies or even older technologies you're really excited about using in mathematics classrooms.
Well, definitely the calculator, the graphing calculator, regardless of which brand, as long as it's user-friendly for the student, there are so many different applications that you can put on those to just create different things. I mean, it's applicable in almost every discipline in math, and on top of that, I love the new age of computer websites that have such interactive activities on them where you can, you know, I know people can't go to the lab every day, but every now and then, once in the 6 weeks at least, to take the students to a lab to give them a different medium. A lot of people don't think it's new technology, but in PowerPoints, you know, we give notes, but they're not really exciting. But you can put the same stuff into a PowerPoint and really make it engaging for the students. And it's not so much of a lecture as it is kind of a video with a lot of pauses, but that's the way they see things nowadays. But also motion detectors, any kind of clicker that you can get your hands on to make it more of a Jeopardy atmosphere rather than I'm just sitting in class. Anything that can bring in excitement, even a timer, an online timer that keeps them on task, you know, all of those things. iPods for lessons. They have so many different things out there right now that people can use to just kind of change up the instruction. It's the same content. Math doesn't change, but the way we deliver it can definitely be mixed up a little bit.
Are you in touch with your former students?
I am. I have students who are in college now who ask for help in classes, and some just to keep contact. You know, I've had students get married or go into the military and go to other states, but they all tell me, even from 10 years ago, I get emails from students who they still say I'm their favorite math teacher, and they've now graduated from college, and you know, it helps me, you know, remember why I do it even when it gets difficult. But they're all still my babies, every last one of them. But I love graduation. It's one of my favorite times of the year to just kind of see the end result, which a lot of people don't get to see if the students move around, but I love that part of it.
Yeah. You talked about your focus on beginning with the end in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that you approach teaching that way and also advising, coaching, and mentoring in that way?
Well, in most respects, most people I know want to know why they're doing something, what the ultimate goal is. And you know, that's an overarching goal, like in a school year. On the day you leave my classroom, these are the things I want you to be able to know. So I'm reaching that goal on the first day of school. I'm starting. Everything I do is with that end in mind. And within a unit, I know how I'm going to assess my students. I know what evaluation instrument I'm going to be using. So I have to make sure that everything I do, not necessarily which worksheet, but what needs to happen to make sure they know these things. And so if you know what your ultimate goal is, then all your instruction will lead up to that goal. And if the students fall short, it's because we might have missed something, but not necessarily that they didn't do well. They might have done very well, but not reached the ultimate goal.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this morning. And I want to thank our listeners for being with us as part of IDRA's Class Notes podcast series. If you're interested in learning more about IDRA's MathSmart model for elementary and secondary students, you'll find information on our website at IDRA.org. Thank you, Paula.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org.